Track 13, Wonderful Weeds. Scourge of the Flowerbeds or Gardener's Friend? Fuchsia Wilkins investigates.
Weeds have a bad reputation. They're renowned for taking up space, for out-competing the plants we actually want in our gardens, and they're often called unsightly for good measure. But what if we were to look at them differently? Rather than becoming frustrated, can we grow fond of them, or even, dare I say it, welcome them into our gardens? Humans have long pitched themselves against voracious, undesirable plants. Ever since land was cleared for agriculture, weeds have been battled against, but they have also been embraced. Medieval herbalists grew plants we now often deem to be weeds for medicinal use. Common yarrow was thought to help clot blood and staunch wounds. Whilst considered a first-class nuisance in many lawns today, dandelions were grown as restorative herbs that were known to relieve gout and ease a cold. So, what's the difference between a weed and a wild flower? Is a weed just a plant that's out of place? The definition varies from plants that propagate uncontrollably to those which obstruct our carefully laid plans or grow uncultivated in undesirable, shabby locations. Wild flowers, on the other hand, have a far more romantic quality as beautiful plants that grow freely in their natural habitats without our intervention. But isn't that just what weeds do? In reality, it's a difference just down to our own perspective. Wildflower expert Simon Harrop and his wife Anne are the founders of Natural Surroundings, an 8-acre garden on the Bayfield estate in North Norfolk. Since 1989, they've leased the land and championed the space as a home for wildlife. Their mission is to promote wildlife-friendly gardening, and at Natural Surroundings, this often means embracing and celebrating the weeds. Weeds are often defined as plants in the wrong place, says Simon, but really, it's all about taste. Whilst we don't welcome plants in the wrong place here at Natural Surroundings, there are plenty of species usually considered to be weeds that we do embrace in the garden. We have some plants here that seed themselves prodigiously, like Herb Robert, Red Campion and Foxgloves. On odd occasions, we've designed areas around them, but mostly we see what comes up and then move them to other parts of the garden. Marjoram is prolific here, for example, but it's great for pollinating insects, so if we find it out of place, we don't just throw it on the compost heap. We think about where we can rehome it, where it will thrive and continue to attract beneficial wildlife. As wildlife-friendly gardening becomes more widespread, it's leading to a new appreciation of wild plants, including those traditionally viewed as weeds. The flowers of these rogue plants, particularly those that bloom early or late into the season, are often perfect for pollinators, providing much-needed sources of nectar and allowing bees, moths and butterflies to thrive. At the end of the growing season, the seed heads are also useful to birds and small mammals and invertebrates, providing food and shelter and boosting biodiversity in our gardens. We've got quite a bit of green alkanet at Natural Surroundings, says Simon. It's quite invasive, and we try to get rid of most of it in the garden. But we do keep it in one place because it's very good for bumblebees, as it flowers really early in the season. As someone who has been actively cultivating wildflowers for years, Simon is pleased, and perhaps tentatively hopeful, to see a vogue for meadows in gardens and community spaces. This, he explains, is much more helpful than leaving a straggly area at the bottom of the garden or foregoing the hoe. We don't really advocate people leaving an unkempt patch for wildlife in their gardens, says Simon, because we think that the whole garden can and should be wildlife friendly. A sympathetically managed garden can attract wildlife without leaving a patch of nettles behind the shed. We enjoy a beautiful and attractive garden at natural surroundings, he says, and we really don't think that you have to compromise that to be wildlife friendly. With just a little bit of thought, says Simon, you can actually make any type of garden more wildlife friendly. You don't have to use pesticides. You don't have to be very fastidious about weeding over the winter months, or cut everything back in your herbaceous borders on the 1st of October. Leaving things for a bit longer can be hugely beneficial, and people are coming to appreciate things like dead seed heads or grass over the winter because they're very attractive. As we become more acutely aware of the impacts of climate change, our gardens can be an obvious place to make a difference on an individual level. By accommodating more wild plants in our gardens, we're paving the way for greater biodiversity on our doorsteps. It's simple, really, says Simon. If your garden is a patio with no vegetation in it, apart from a pelargonium in a pot, it's not contributing greatly to biodiversity. It's undoubtedly more ecologically responsible to plant lots of flowers and trees and shrubs. And if you're happy to tolerate a few wild plants that put themselves here and there, then even better. But for anyone who's rubbing their hands and thinking that less weeding means less work, Simon has bad news. Gardening is all about controlling what grows, and that's the same if you have a wildlife-friendly garden where you embrace the weeds. Whatever you're doing, he says, the success is going to be proportional to how much effort you're prepared to put into it. There are weeds that Simon's team won't tolerate at natural surroundings, of course, such as voracious ground elder, which is confined to manageable areas, and smothering goose grass, which grows with wild abandon in the summer and actively damages what they're trying to do. But on the whole, they try to have a policy of embracing the unexpected and leaning into the virtues of these wild plants, whether because they're beautiful, useful, or a little bit of both.